Good evening, and thank you very much for sharing some of your precious time with us. My first questions will be about your personal background. Would you tell me first about the jobs you held before you took this position, and maybe briefly introduce yourself?
Okay, I'm on my rank, I'm Police Chief Inspector Ramkrishan Haveria from the Philippines, and I'm already 16 years in the police service in our country. The positions that I held before are first in the regional operations office in our country, in the national capital region. And then when I was transferred to the station, I held the positions like the station chief of the police community relations office, the same as the concurrent chief of the internal affairs office on that office. After that, I was transferred to be as the chief of the drug enforcement unit in our station, and drug enforcement followed that to be the assistant chief of our special operations group, handling the different crimes, thefts, others, and specials. And again, I was returned to the new drug enforcement office in our station in our country, because we have a new law. We call it the PDEA law, or the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency, who is now the sole office concerned in drug enforcement. But they still have the agreement with the police to work with us, to assist them. So we are working now in partner with the Drug Enforcement Agency. We call it Anti-Illegal Drugs Task Force of the police. So I'm again the chief of that office until such time that I was assigned again. I was lucky to be part of the UN police in Kosovo in 2004-2005. When I come back, I was working now at the national headquarters of our police in the Philippines, at the Directorate for Operations in one division, which I'm qualified to be as the deputy of the one division, Special Operations Division. We are dealing with visiting people from other countries. We are the one who are setting up the security for them, and also from the local dignitaries. That's all.
What are the main differences and maybe similarities between the mission in East Timor and the mission in Kosovo from your point of view?
Well, basically, it's the culture. It's the culture of the Kosovar compared with Timor-Leste. This is the number one I observe. And in their implementation of the UN guidelines, it's almost the same. They have the same thing, only some. I know that they are correcting him. Some example, the capability of the internet is a little not much good here. So, but now I think they're already doing better, rather than the first time that I arrived here.
very briefly, it would be helpful to hear your own description of the history of the mission, the goals, and the current objectives. We welcome comparisons to Kosovo, but I would like to have a little bit your point of view about the history of the mission and the goals of the mission. Could you describe these briefly for us?
Well, the prime reason I know is for them to stand by their own, which is always the objective of the UN, to assist them, since they want independence on the part of their country. And I know that on the approach of the UN, you cannot really rush them, because like I said, example, like I'm always telling to our people here, our fellow UNFOLs, you cannot rush them. Example, they're already here for 5 years as a police officers, and they already have practices that they do. To consider also the culture, you cannot implement, example, if you're dealing with culture against the laws, so there are conflicts. Example, the culture is kind of, yeah, they take time, but on the law, you cannot take time. You have a grace period once you arrested someone. So you should introduce that to them to follow the law. However, you cannot do it easy. That's only one sample that I can see. So it's the same with other matters when you check on what is their culture. So, but it's not good if you are going to change their culture, because it's hard to accept. But based on law, you just try to give them some senses for them to later on accept that this should be the right thing to do.
Do you have a specific example of this?
Yeah, example, the grace period of the criminal procedure. Example, they have 72 hours to detain a person. That's the only maximum to file a case. And they are taking more than 72 hours because on their culture, what I read is, it doesn't matter about time. The point for them is as long as they accomplish their task. So that's already a conflict. So only to introduce to them that based on the law, these are the things that you need to follow. But you cannot rush them in. That's why on my first mission to the second, I understand now what the UN wants. They are taking this time because it's hard to accept in a short period. You can 5 years against you want it 2 days, so it cannot be done. So I think I said that approach is appropriate.
What would you say is the major challenge that faced the mission when you took this job? So not maybe, we're going to talk about your own challenges, especially in Balkau, but could you tell us a little bit more about what you think the mission, what was the major challenge the mission faced?
On my part, not to consider the national, on this level of the district where I'm working, the challenge I can see is for them to be at par with the other police officers, other countries, because that's what I'm telling them, that when I'm talking with the PNTLs, it's way better that we want you to become, if not better than us as a police officer, at least the same level. So that's a challenge that it's really hard to take it in a short period of time. But you really want them to stand by their own, that they understand these things. But we're lucky that, well, I heard before that same people from our country are the one who have been assigned here. So I was surprised that they know the same tactics that we're using. That makes me easy for it, but the hardest is to make it more progressive and more appropriate for them to follow.
Do you think the previous missions were successful in this regard, especially concerning the PNTL and actually the police reform in general?
I think yes, but the problem is the government. Their government, I think the failure comes from the government, because I know that the UN already left them alone to stand by their own, but I think there's a mismanagement a little. That's why they need again the assistance of the UN. That's the reason I think they're only refreshing out these people.
We talk a little bit about the status of public order and crime in the country and maybe when you arrived, but maybe also specifically in Balkau. And maybe you can contrast it with the current situation. So have you seen any evolution in this regard concerning the status of public order and crime?
Public order, based on what you can gather from the past, there are improvements in the peace and order. And also, yeah, even how many months that we are already here, we are teaching them. They already learned about, like I said, those things that they need to change in terms of how to implement the public order, how to maintain. So they already accepted it, but we need more to refine. But it's more that I can see the attitudes compared to others, like I said, on previous mission. I can see that at least it's still very manageable here in the crime situation, because imagine, when you find some crimes that happen, it's really brutal. Like some of them are really, you can say it's not human what they're doing
here.
But it's very seldom. And once it happens, after you just count 1-2 days, suspect will surrender. He finds his guilt that, because I was thinking, we have the same religion. I cannot do that kind of attitude. How come they can do that, that we are the same? But later on, I recognized the religion is really still strong because they surrendered after finding what they've done strong.
Do you have a specific example of this?
Yeah, like the killing that happened before here, that they used their kind of
machete.
Yeah, machete. They used the machete. It's really how many cut that it suffered from the victim from the back. I was surprised to see that. I said it's very inhuman. You cannot do that. In our place, you can't do that for a religious person. But it's really in a other way, on a other point, you can see that. Yeah, like I said, 2 days, 3 days. They go to surrender. They find it very, they are very guilty about it, that they surrender of what they've done. So I said, it's still good.
And how would you explain this? I mean, not the crime itself, but the surrender. Do you think it is due to the religion, as you mentioned, but do you think also it is due to the influence of the traditional system of justice or the influence of the community in general?
It's the same. Influence and also the religion, because it also happens like there's a crime yesterday. The influence of the environment of the people and so on around them makes him surrender.
And what are the major threats to security and public order that you face here? What are the major crimes in Balcão?
So far, from the last UNPOLS, I know they have problems with elections, but the time I'm here, it's only very minor case. Only this one, some incidents that happen, mostly it's kind of domestic. Majority of the case, domestic, so it's not a degree that you consider very serious. It's only within them.
And what's the difference in Kosovo in this regard?
There are incidents there. There's a little difference because immediately, example, compared to other district, I can't say Bokau because you have police instinct. We always use that. When I arrive here in the other district, you can see that people are very unfriendly. I was surprised when I arrived in Bokau. It's different. It's very friendly here. So you can see the environment, you can feel it, and you can even use some tactics to identify, to know if they are really that serious. Because as a tactic, I'll give you one, like when you look on their face, you can see that they are strangely looking, like very sharp to you. So one tactic like we use, example for me, what I use is just to greet them. If they didn't greet back, then you know there's a problem with the guy. But mostly if they greet, you know already, because they already show themselves. So it's easy to know if they are, what kind of thinking they have in their mind by means of these tactics. And like I said, you can feel the environment. In Kosovo, when I'm going around, I feel safe. I can even walk there without firearm for me. I consider that. I know that sometimes only they have trouble, very minimal.
But you experienced the 2004 riots, right?
Actually, we are there because of the riot.
Okay.
So the riot happens in March. We are called there to investigate these riots. And the same attitude. Only you can see there are also good points on the people here and there, but only on the approach, but mostly at the end. The same, they have the same guilt like when you already call them.
And you mentioned you try to greet the people in the street, and if they don't greet at you, if they don't respond, actually there's a problem. So what's the next step if they don't answer to your...
You don't mind because you are doing it mostly on patrol duties. So you just identify the areas. So next time that you're patrolling, you know what areas that you need to avoid because they are throwing stones here in the vehicle, damaging the glass. So on those areas, even when you first arrive in the area, you can see that your mobile cars are already guarded with metal. So you already know, oh, this area is trouble. How come they're using it? How come the other area they're not using? Although you just arrived, you can already estimate. So by your own, you can already, when you're doing patrol, you can, like I said, estimate those. And then you ask also from your fellow officers what areas are trouble here. And then you also make some research like that. Like when you greet them, you can ask, oh, they're really trouble.
How would you explain this behavior? The stone throwing?
It's more on childish because they are youths. Even when I was thinking, because there are how many, one group reacting like very sharply, like, look at these people, and then they even show sometimes that they are aiming to throw a stone to you, to your vehicle. And then I say, look at these people, what are they doing? What I was also talked about my colleague, their children. My young children, that's why you just think, okay, maybe they grow later. And then, like here, it is more than you need to teach them. More, it's more community policy work that you need to until such time. Even now, I heard like the news that it's very different compared that when the first time you arrive, almost every day you can heard report that they throw stones from your vehicle. But lately, it's very, very minimal now.
And could you briefly describe the programs that you are implementing or that you implemented actually in Baucau specifically? Because as you mentioned, the situation here is different from DD or different districts. Yeah.
So the UN guidelines program is more on the mentoring now, because we are the purpose is for them to be certified as police officers already. And anyway, they are already given this responsibility before. It only happens that when there's the problem that happens before, that we need to refresh them again. But consider ourselves based on the other district. You can see on the lineup, we are one of the districts who can be earlier be turned over in terms of the PNTL. But other aspects, there are more aspects to be considered. Of course, like the number one problem is logistics. So that will take time, because how can you provide those things? Like number one, vehicle, fuel. So that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem.
That's the biggest problem, actually. Okay. The PNTL, no problem, because they are really wanting to work. They are... They are willing to work. They're very eager to learn, and you know that they really want to have the responsibility with them. So for that, it's an advantage for us, because we can easily teach them, because they want it. It's, you know, the procedure. If you don't want to learn, it's hard to teach.
So you don't face any specific problems or obstacles in your mentoring program with the PNTLs?
On the mentoring program, no problem. But before that, because as part of the mentoring, what we're doing here is, like I said, we're trying to know what are the other issues that we need to address. Like example, traffic. They don't have the same procedures that other countries are using. So we are trying to discuss with the commander if it is doable, and they accept. So lately, it's very easy for us to implement. Also the investigation tactics, administration. We were surprised lately that they are wanting to know more. It's only, I don't know, maybe there's only a gap that they're not talking before, I think before us. So now we're implementing that from the guide of the UN. We're also co-located. We're joined together, example like this one. The commander of the UNPOL, commander of the PNTL. Same admin office of the PNTL, UNPOL, community policy investigation, they are co-located. So anything that they need to learn, it's very easy, because their counterpart is already there. So we already encourage them, ask things that you think you don't know about. So they're surprised, and they're very appreciative of what is happening. And for us, we're also proud, because they learn about it, they learn something.
And so could you tell us a little bit more about the different programs that you're implementing? So you briefly you mentioned this the monitoring program, and this is really interesting actually. Yeah. But could you tell us a little bit more about the other programs, maybe related to CPU, for example, or different areas? If you have any programs that are actually specific to Baucau?
No. The only specific here is that mentoring. We are concentrating on the mentoring, because by mentoring, already all of the aspects, like I said, logistics are already being top. All of them. The only thing that we're adding is like what I said, when we are initiating trainings or information or teaching them what will be better for implementing, like problem in law, problem with administration, how to manage. Those were additional things that we're just injecting to them. So to them, anyway, it's actually, if you also consider it, it's also part of mentoring, because mentoring is also teaching them.
Of course. So you don't have any programs that are actually aimed at the local population? For example, the problem of stone throwing?
What we do there is the community policy. Our community policy unit is the one going around. So when they identified all those problems, they're the one who is making, initiating meetings with the SOCU chief on the sub, on the other, and the sub-district administrators about what are the problems there, and they discuss those things. And it happens that when we found that the issues are very, a little higher level, we interfere, like what happened to the double killing. We ourselves, and the district commander, call on those leaders all around, and we discuss with them the problem, and we find solution to solve it. Because those problems really arose that we get information that even the community would like to leave those place and evacuate their place. So we call them up, tell them the situation, we give them some senses, and we say that evacuation is not one of those options because it's not good. They are, the people who are fighting are actual children, and you're the one who are the leaders and the matured people there, and you're the one who is being going away. That's not good. So they get the senses, we give them some information or ideas, and they were surprised. Even for us, we were surprised that we know that they know, but maybe they, because they are clogged on their way of thinking, that they forgot that this is the better approach that you need to do. So we assist them, we implement. Now they're already quiet in those areas.
And can you tell us how concretely it works, the relationship between the ONPOLs and the local community? Do you have any specific example or personal stories, or maybe other stories from other ONPOLs, your colleagues, that you want to share with us?
Regarding just, the community?
Yeah, just to give us a little bit yes, a better idea about how concretely it works.
We get, as I advise to them when we're going around community policy, try to know their problems, and then we address it to the proper person. Example, mostly the problem here is irrigation, and some are lands are being grabbed by someone. So those are most the issues they have there. So what we do there is, yes, to we know their problems. If others we can do, we can assist. We assist them, but mostly is we tap the right person. Sample like the land grabbing. So we need the interference of the sub-district administrator, the SOCU chief. So we come up to them to meet with our police community relation UNPOLs and the counterpart PNTL. So with them, they discuss together about these issues, and they make follow-ups to those issues so they know the progress.
Do you have a specific example of successful progress? Or maybe if you have an example of unsuccessful process, maybe in the first first days.
Unsuccessful, yes, because example, you set up a meeting there, both groups, both parties agree to go in a meeting. Later on, the other one will not attend, so that will be take more time that you need to reset. Sometimes happen like three times on the third meeting that the person arrived on that meeting, and there's also incident like I think this person is only trying to disturb the other group. So it's already been handled by the SOCU chief. He said he's already going to control it because in that matter, the other person doesn't want to agree or to discuss those issues. So
it's like there's three groups.
Two groups. Yeah. So the SOCU chief is the actually a leader of the area. We call it SOCU chief. So they are the one who's mediating with them. And if it needs to arise to the sub-district administrator, they elevate those levels. And like I said, one sample of the success is the skilling that we address them, we assist them to go in those areas. And anyway, also the leaders of these groups are with them. So the basic principle there is people around them can see them combining all the efforts together, working, so they know that they are united in doing these things.
And the unsuccessful one is because there was a dissension.
Yeah, because of the delay they're doing. And then this, this one who said that is my land, don't want to show up on the meeting. And then after a long time again, so I heard this one is already, how many, 2 years? How many times he show up again and say, this is my land. When they are going to show in the meeting again, he will not show up. So the Soko chief said, next time you do this again, he's going to have a problem already. So he cannot be given a good the point of view is already on the side of the one who is there.
And based on your experience, are there any principles or suggestions you could offer others to make their efforts to work with traditional or religious leaders more successful?
In the community?
Yes. So the relationship between police officers and, based on your experience, ampuls and the local community. You described it pretty well. How you were able, for example, to solve this murder case with the help of the local community. Do you have any advice or suggestions for other police officers maybe working in different conditions around the world?
Yeah, because that's the same even in our place. It's always the involvement of the community. We are not Superman. We cannot do that alone as police officers. Without the help of the community, we cannot progress or we cannot be successful in that. Always on the community, because they are the one involved. The crime always involves in the community where people can see them. Not the police, not all of them. So without the involvement of the community, I don't think it will be a success. Even in our place, always the involvement of the community is essential on dealing with crimes or problems in that place, in the area.
So do you have any advice or suggestion for other police officers? Maybe very practical matters, but you think that might be to make their efforts more successful?
Yes, to make it more successful, I suggest that always involve the community on matters involving policing, because policing must always involve, in the smallest, is the family. So the police cannot work alone. Always involve them. So it's easy for them to report even incidents if they know that the police is considered as part of their neighbors, if you're always there with them.
And is it a general UN procedure to actually rely on the local community as much as you are relying right now? Or it's only based on your own policy, your own perspective? Are you the only one implementing this? Do you see it is also the case in different districts with your different colleagues working in the...
I know it's already part of them, because by the structure of the police office, you can see already the community policing. So it means that they're already involving the community. Only it happens that some example in UNPOLS, if you are assigned in the community policing and you're more, you're not more experienced on that unit, you seems to get the idea, but you're not implementing it. So you need only to remind them so they get the idea of this one. I'm working with the community policing before, so I'm always dealing with the community. But if you are always in a different example investigation, so you're not dealing with how to communicate better or to show your to have a good relationship with the community people, which is very important.
And what was the situation in this regard in Kosovo concerning the relationship with the local community?
No, the same. We are doing the same. We even go around, even go down our patrol, we talk to them, we ask them about the problem. The same. We're doing the same.
I have now some questions about what your daily routine looks like. So what does an average day look like for you? Is it office work, 8 to 5?
Yeah, it's more...
Patrolling? Or could you tell us what an average day looks like for you?
Before I go to be the position, I was in patrol, because always when you start, we go on patrol, which is appropriate because you know the area by patrolling. So it's really a good approach that once you UNPOL arrive in a mission, you should patrol the area.
This is a policy, so it's always a case? No.
I don't know, but here it's always a case that you go to patrol.
In Balcao?
Yeah. You always go to patrol. So it's good because you know the environment, you know the areas that you're patrolling. So
even the district commander?
Yes.
Was on the patrol?
Yeah, you go there. For example, the, are you talking about the PNTEL or the UNPOL?
UNPOL.
Yeah, you know, he is also given time to go to the patrol. Because he, you should really know the place. Example, if I don't go to patrol, it's hard for me to identify when the radio is telling that there's an incident in the area or the patrol team are in this location doing the patrol. It's hard to know. So it's better, like, example, I work there for more, at least 3 months. If the person there work for less than me, you can analyze, because when you're already going to areas very remote, he doesn't know about it. Oh, you don't know this place. Of course, I patrolled this place before. It's better. So in, what's the question about?
what an average day looks like.
Average day looks like, yeah. So mostly, you since on the level of the district and service commanders, you always check on your mail, because there might be some instructions there given to you. You always do that. Even when I was before in the operations, because after patrol, I become the chief operations. Some instructions comes late, so sometimes it's either I leave the office late, or I come back late to check if there are new orders to be done in the early morning, because they're doing escort jobs, there are some visitors coming. Those are some most instructions that they are happening, so you should know it, because you're going to be late in giving those things. So that's the basic things that you know. Then you check around, you go around places, you check the, you monitor the radio. If there are really some issues that you need to assist, then you assist. And that's like now we are concentrating on mentoring, so you always monitor what's going on in mentoring.
So exactly, you mentioned it, but you have other responsibilities that you can address every day. So for example, planning, strategy, assessment, monitoring, you mentioned. Would you describe these responsibilities? I think you described pretty well the mentoring, but the other responsibilities. And say about how much time you're able to spend on them compared to your daily routine you just mentioned, the emails and...
Oh, it's not much anymore, because we have the mentoring unit, so you just check on what are they doing there. So and we are increasing our personnel and mentoring, because they're really rushing this mentoring for them to complete the course. So what I heard from the district commander before I left for my break, the commissioner asked me how can I set
police commissioner Aaron Baloya,
how can we on my view, how can I make it a little faster on this fast tracking this mentoring. So I said we need to add, I'm going to pull out some resources for personnel to add to the mentoring unit, so he make it better and give me more mentoring officers from other districts to assist me. And then on the communication with the UN, I think they need more, so we again are adding more UNPOLs in the mentoring unit to catch up on those requirements that they are setting up for us.
What are the requirements specifically?
So we need them to, the guidelines is to have a 40 hours training and 40 daily mentoring records. So it's hard for us, because the sub districts in our areas there are one sub district that you need 3 hours to go there. Actually, if you go there for 3 hours and then you need to go back for 3 hours again, how many times? You only have 2 hours there. That's why I heard that they bargained that we need to stay there for 1 day to make it easy. They already catch 2 days rather than setting 6 hours for coming back and forth from that areas. So, and then we need, we increase the BKL and personnel to cover up those sub-districts.
And there's any other requirements for the monitoring? So you mentioned logistics, hours of training.
Yeah, and then the peace and order of the area. Mm. So peace and order, no problem. We're only concentrating on the two issues, the training or the PNTL and the logistics.
Okay. And who's going to provide the logistics in the region here? Is it the government? Is it the government's responsibility or your responsibility to provide the logistics?
That is the government
for PNTL.
Yeah, that actually it's their government who should provide. But I don't know if the UN, how can they? I know they will assist them, but I don't want to go ahead of them because it's their call. But it is the government that should be providing, because if they want to stand by their own, of course, they should be the one who should provide for those things with their people.
So what can you do specifically in this area? You are just...
We just recommend to them what are the basic requirements that they need to stand alone, so for them to set as a standard.
And could you tell us what are your perception of this? What is your assessment in this regard?
It's doable. I know it's doable.
Just because we need, I would like to know specifically what are for your assessment in this regard. For example, one computer per
office,
PNTL or per
office.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit more about this?
If it is provided.
Yeah, if it is provided, but also specifically, what is your assessment? What is your point of view on that? What kind of advice you gave the government in this regard?
Yeah, I know it's very hard for them to buy those things also. Well, I can't see you, but if the UN can provide some of them, I think it will be better.
As the staff in Baokao change since your first days on the job, so you mentioned there's more people now working on the monitoring.
Yes.
But could you tell us, have you perceived any change, reduction of personnel, or anything of this sort here?
Changing.
Could you tell us what is the evolution in this regard? More personnel working in Baokao, less personnel? In which unit specifically?
District commander did this because we have two unpols per units, so we only task them to assist like the deputies to assist with the mentoring giving them, I think, 3 days a week to assist on the mentoring. And then they said that if we need personnel to, there's a need arises in the patrol, even on our level, we're going to assist them just to add the manpower if they really need. So we are sacrificing ourselves to make this successful on the mentoring process.
Did your predecessor leave you any records or advice you have found especially helpful on your first days on the job?
On my first days, because I'm on patrol, so we don't need those records much.
But after, when you took this position?
I see those, so there are records here, like admin and investigation, they have the records. And even the report of the unpol who are working there, they said they are surprised that they have a good record management investigation. I said that's good.
Have you been able to meet with your predecessor? The former deputy district commander?
There is no deputy district commander on the time that I arrived here. So after 4 months, I become the deputy.
Okay,
so there's no.
Where else have you turned for advice about how to handle problems? Because you didn't have any predecessor to give you some advice about how to handle problem.
If the problem involves a unit, we call them on a meeting. So we discuss what's the problem, and we even tap on the PNTL to join us. So we discuss the problem and solve it on the meeting.
So you try to find information from your colleagues and from the PNTL as well?
I didn't work alone. We always work we always make a meeting to discuss what's the problem.
It is often said that a key to all effective policing is intelligence and situational awareness, of being aware of the crime problems and threats to public order. You mentioned how you are actually all participating in the patrol on the first days, which is very interesting. But can you talk a little bit more about how you and the mission here in Baokao gather information about the environment you are policing?
Yeah, we have a unit, intelligence unit, who gathers information. She give us threat situations, even if there are some activities, it is automatic in our operations. That is always a standard, that you need intelligence information, not only before, but on the whole duration. Before the duration and after the duration, always they need to update us if there is any threat.
And could you tell us a little bit from your own knowledge, how are they proceeding to actually gather this information?
Yeah, they're working with their counterpart intel officers who are also in the field, and our officers who are assigned intelligence actually are selected who can speak Bahasa, so they can narrate with people in the community. So it's easy for them. Even if you're a trained intelligence officer but you cannot speak the language, it's very hard for the barrier. So for us it's easy because they can speak with them.
And do you speak any of the main languages used here?
Only basic.
Is it Bahasa, Telum, or maybe Portuguese?
Actually no, but only basic. And
basic
Telum? Only the basic. And there are very few words similar with our language in our country.
And how many of your most important top staff members speak these languages?
I think all the Malaysians can speak Bahasa. And one El Salvador, from our intelligence, he can understand.
Mm. How do you think language differences influence your ability to be effective?
It only takes time because you need to translate. That's the barrier. Not like when you speak directly, because it, time consumes. It doubles up when you need to translate it with
another.
Okay.
Could you describe a little bit your induction training here in East Timor? Could you tell us a little bit more about your induction?
Yeah, it's good because they teach us the culture that you can expect there, what conditions they have, and so basically you already have an information that in addition to what you have read on the records from what's happening here. So, and all the things that you need to know about your personal things that you can have in UN and the people that you'll meet. It's a good thing that you learn something.
And once you arrived in the mission, what training did you receive?
I joined the presentation training, the triage training here, and I was supposed to take up the human rights training, which is mandatory. However, it was the next human rights training that I want to join, because it was given to all our members here. It was conflict with my break, so I said maybe next time when I come back. So I have the triage, the presentation. I think that too.
I would like now to turn the conversation to some of the broader challenges that often affect efforts to build or reform a police institution. First of all, what kinds of allies in the host country you think are essential for success of the reform?
Allies?
Yeah.
I think all.
All of them?
Yes.
Did you mention them?
All countries?
I mean, no, specifically in the country. Maybe international NGOs, but specifically not just inside UNPOLS, but also,
okay.
I mean, from the perspective of the reform process. Not just NGOs, but it might be, for example, you mentioned the Suko chief, but I mean, what kind of allies do you think they are really essential, not just useful? Maybe you can also explain us which one are really useful, but which one you think they are really essential for?
My number one is religion. So the religion is... because they are here, they are more than, I think 98% are Catholics here. Actually, I'm also Catholic, so it's very essential because they are very fanatic. So it's very essential, they believe.
So that's the bishop's office, right? I mean, who is representing the religion?
The bishop and the church.
Okay.
The church.
So you meet with them because they are essential. If they are essential for the reform process, you obviously you meet with them.
Yeah, the Soko Chief, yeah, they're also essential because they're the one immediately in the community. NGO is also there. We have more on construction, you know. We also deal with them because we have also colleagues here who are Filipinos who are working at the NGOs. So we always talk to them with issues here around Peloon Falls. Actually, those groups are very essential here.
Do you have any advice about the best way to build support among these people?
Well, economy.
Maybe you can take each one separately.
On the part of the officers, yeah, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, if you have any advice for other police officers around the world about how the best way to build the support you need among these people. So, for example, we mentioned the religion, the church and the bishop. Could you tell us a little bit more? I know that you mentioned it in previous questions, but I would like to discuss it a little bit more.
When we make a relationship with the PNTEL officers, we need to have to show them that we are sincere. Because before I can see that some own policy, they just talk to the PNTEL just because they need something from them. And they forgot that they are also people who thinks. They underestimate these people. So you should find ways to approach them that they will know that you are really sincere on what your intention is to them. That's what I'm doing with them. That's why I got a good relationship with the commander, actually, and the deputy commander. And I always support them. If they need something that I can do, I will provide them with those things.
And during the period you have worked in East Timor, have you ever been unable to proceed with an initiative or hampered in your management practices by the lack of capacity in other parts of the government or lack of cooperation in the community? If yes, could you give us an example?
On my early stage in patrol, so I don't have any problem. I don't know on my predecessors because they're the one who are handling on their level. Because I only see that one when I was already here. On the patrol level, it's easy for me. I don't have see any conflict with them.
And in Kosovo, maybe, when you were in Kosovo?
Oh, no, I don't have problem. I was working there as investigation. Mm-hmm. So when some may be reluctant, but when they analyze it, they will work with you.
Are there underlying political, social, or economic conditions that have made the reform harder or easier in your current job right now?
Economic is actually the main issue here, you know. But for us, it only affects. But yes, it affects. But it's controllable. But you know, that's really always, even in other mission, it's the economy always.
What do you mean? It's the economy always.
It's the one that affects, because if people are working, there's no problem.
But unemployment is
unemployment. Yeah, because like those people, example, who are making trouble because they're doing nothing. That's why. But if they are very busy working, they won't do this.
Can you tell us about one cultural difference that has required you to actually change a proposal you have made, or maybe a program or an action that you supported?
No, because I already studied the culture before I do something. That's why sometimes, other might have some, if they do not know much of the culture, someone will tend to not realizing those things. That's why I'm saying stop it, because it's their culture.
Are there any innovations or experiments you know about, either in your current position or in your position in Kosovo, which you think merit more attention? Might be some other officers might be interested in knowing more about it.
Experimental.
Yeah, in general, the general projects that you have seen or you have heard about?
Actually, when we have something like experimental, we always discuss as a group. So it's because I cannot do that alone, if I'm going to enforce it, I know it's going to be a breakdown. It will not be successful. So I always discuss it with the group and with the PNTEL counterpart. So he will also inject those ideas, so you can realize to make it complete, so and acceptable for them, and it will be supported. So it is not we can fail with that kind of thing.
Do you have any specific examples in this regard?
Yeah, example like we give them somehow ways on how to document the arrest. So we discuss it with the commander, and then with the unit concerned, and after finalizing the output of what we have discussed, again we consult them to see if there are more things that to be corrected from his side, and then before we implement, I just started. Okay, let's go.
I have now questions regarding the UN itself and the UN internal management.
Okay.
And also questions regarding the relationship between the UN and the host country personnel. If you could create a wish list, what two or three changes in the UN internal management or policy would you want in order to be more effective in your job?
Changes.
The UN internal management. And you can also refer to your past experience.
For me, the management is okay. The only problem is by combining different countries, different cultures. That's the main problem, because of course attitudes are different. But on the structure, it's okay.
Do you have a specific example?
Of course, when people are very long in a mission, maybe they come stressed at you. You have some conflicts already with them, and of course you just try to minimize it to level with these people. If you try to argue more, it's not better with fellow UNPOLs. So it, I think it's because of the culture, the difference. It's very hard, but the structure, I don't think there's a problem, because it's okay. An example here, when I see the structure, it's the same with our structure. The only thing is, of course, in your country, you're in control of the people there. Not like here, it's a different country. That only caused a minor problem.
And in your line of work, is there an aspect of UN policy or management that you think works better now than it used to in the past? Especially, you worked in Kosovo before, so have you seen any aspect that now works better than it used to?
For me, if I observe, it's almost the same aspect that they're doing. That's why, like I said before, I was also eager when I was new to make it faster for them. I said they can learn easier, but when I recognize what the UN is doing, and like I said, the culture, it makes me better on the second mission, that I realized that, yeah, you shouldn't rush these people, because it is hard to change things that they already learned from a long time already. Only let them think of acceptance is better, because if they accept, it will be easy for them to change.
And are there two or three mistakes you commonly observe in the way donor countries or international organizations like the UN make with respect to the relationships with host country personnel or local population?
Actually, here, I know even the Timor government requested for the UN, so it cannot be wrong, because they're the one who's asking for the UN's assistance. So it's easy like that. Only maybe on the aspect of when they are agreeing on what will be, how will be the what do you call this? The authority of the UN in the country. It's only the problem that they are discussing about. But on help assisting the country, no, I don't think there's really a problem.
And with the local population?
Local population.
Do you see any mistakes usually made by the uncles?
No, I don't think so. It's more than the local population who doesn't want to accept the support of the UN. There are groups like that, I know. But maybe I was thinking it's only part of what they feel. But inside, I know they know that something's happening better for them other than none.
Could you offer two or three recommendations for improving UN UNPO recruitment? For example, to increase the talent pool or find people better attuned to local conditions. Do you have any recommendations in this regard? For the recruitment of UN police officers?
I cannot say with other countries because I only heard and I don't want to discuss rumors, but in our country it's good because they give us examination very strict. That really, if you are not, you cannot pass the standard of the UN, you cannot join the mission. In other mission, I heard they're making it lesser, but I don't want to say something because it's not a fact for me. Mm-hmm.
And would you tell me about a homegrown success, a story about a problem that local personnel, for example, PNTL in this case, solved on their own without your help? Do you have anything in mind?
Actually, all the cases here now, I was surprised, like when I said, when I was in Dili. We are the one who is patrolling the area in Dili. When I arrived here, I was surprised that the PNTL are working here. We're just there to support them. So all those cases that we are handling here, is actually the PNTL is working already. We are only there to assist them, to check what they're doing, if they do it right, if they committed some mistakes that we try to encourage them, try to do this one, but actually they're the one doing it already.
And what are the biggest challenges you think the police force, the PNTL, will face when the UN will withdraw?
Well, the full responsibility of being the officer here without the UN, that will be the responsibility. And if they will accept what we left them to follow, if they follow it, I think they will succeed.
I have just one more question, if you're willing. If you have the chance to write a handbook for people, for other police officers who have to build civilian police units in challenging environments, what kinds of topics would you consider most important?
Well, the topics are police procedures, but mostly the book will be based on how they, because we have different procedures, it's almost the same, but a little different. So you should adopt what is there. That will be the handbook. It's a handbook, police handbook that I'm going to make for them to be guided with all these things and also to be guided with what are the cultures that to be considered based on this. So this handbook will always be followed while doing all police functions in that area.
Thank you very much.
Okay.